Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now. Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio stations that discuss solutions for the Black community in this country, presents Black America. Now, if you have a question or a comment, just dial 516-531-9540. That's 516-531-9540. And press 1. The lineup for this week as you...
Hold it now!
Just pressed the wrong button, folks. It's Saturday. We have Provocative Thought, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Carter Steed is the host. Tuesday, myself, host of Black Girl America, and my name is Kenny Jones. On Wednesday, we have The Cutting Edge with Michonne, with Miss Michonne Williams, who will be joining us tonight, by the way. Voter suppression has been a topic now for the past 20 years, especially in the local state levels. Voter suppression is merely has been a tool, especially in our community, to influence the outcome of an election. Now, this continues to be an issue in our nation. Tonight's guest will go in detail because he ran for mayor in his town, and it was a very, very close race. And from the article I read, it was several allegations towards the winner, I believe, that there were voter suppression. I know for a fact, we just had, in my state, we just had the primaries for the Senate, and there were voter suppression. The people waiting online for 6 hours, the vote, not enough voting machines. People sent the wrong ballots, the wrong sites and everything. And I think that might be some tools that people use for voter suppression. But tonight, yes, I'm going to have him. Like I said, he's a businessman. He's a fixture in his community. And he came close to winning the mayor race in his hometown. And this gentleman is named Mr. John Singletary. Welcome to Black Herb America, Mr. Singletary.
How are you doing today?
Can you hear me? All right, Brother John. I'm very honored to have you tonight. And I know this is like an issue at your heart because your campaign manager speaks of it all the time. Tell our audience, you know, what are some of the problems that exist with voter suppression?
Well, in the race that I was involved in, there were several irregularities. One of them was that the ballot box did not show all of the names of every voter. And every voter's name, every candidate's name must appear on the ballot box. And that was not the case. So that was one issue. Another issue was that they were using absentee ballots with no signatures. And so that is illegal to use an absentee ballot that is not signed by a voter. Another issue was that they were using precincts that were not certified precincts or polling locations. Before an election, the law requires them to publish in a public paper the polling locations that they will be voting at. And we had two precincts that, at least two, that were not put in the public notice. And as a result, no one knew except the incumbent that those polling locations were, in fact, to be used. We also had 14,000 people who they removed or did not put on what they call the EVRL list. That is a list that is used when you go in to vote. It is used to determine whether or not a person can vote. And so if they're not on that list, they tell them you can't vote. And the only way for you to vote then is to ask for a provisional ballot. And so it creates a long backlog for different people at the polling locations. And that causes, again, a problem of people turning away because of the long line saying that, you know, we're just not going to vote. Most recently, what we found is that in South Carolina, we don't have a system where they purge voters. However, we do have what they call from the active list and place them on the inactive list for different reasons. Two such reasons would be if you have not voted in two elections or if you've moved your location, then you cannot vote in that election because they put you into an inactive category. South Carolina just put out 120,000 letters to people that they moved into that inactive category, which is really, in my opinion, against the Constitution. You have the right to vote. And you've got the right to refrain from voting. You may be boycott voting for some reason or another. And if they say that if you don't vote, then we're going to remove your right to vote by putting you into an inactive category, then to me that's a constitutional violation.
Yeah, they can't do that. That's against the law.
It should be, but we see sweeping all across the country. They're allowing people to be purged from a system because they choose not to exercise their right to vote. So these are the kinds of things that we're going to, across the country, have to make sure that we get involved with in terms of if our judges are making these kinds of decisions, if you're in a state that you vote for the judges, simply don't vote those judges back in. If you're in a state in which vote on judges, don't vote those representatives back in. Because they are literally trampling on your right as a citizen, and they're putting a badge of slavery on you.
Now, let's say, okay, there was an election that you was physically unable to get to the precinct or wherever they had your machine located, or if there was a crisis in your family and another, I mean, things happened. Once every 4 years, or you know, things happen. People go through a crisis. Crisis will last for a couple of years. That person,
they don't think
will not be allowed to vote because they didn't vote in a couple of years, or it's like over like 10 years. Like, what is the number?
If you do not vote for two elections, then you've lost your right.
So that's 2 years, or once every four years.
Two presidential elections, so 8 years. then you can't vote. But what if you were into a coma?
Yeah.
And you wake up and you've lost your right to vote. I mean, your right to vote, if you are an active voter outside of you passing away, or you asking for them to remove it or for a felony or something like that, then you should maintain your right to vote. It is more cumbersome and resource intensive for them to remove you than to leave you there. And this tells you that our right to vote is so precious that they are willing to absorb additional expenses in order to take that right away. And that's why we have to get out and vote.
And do you think that this is going to be a regular practice throughout the country?
Oh, absolutely. They're finding that, that this will allow them to decrease the voting base, particularly of the Democratic Party, that is predominantly in South Carolina. We're 60% of the voting base when it comes to voter participation. So in doing that, and we have the more transient communities, what happens is it affects mostly the black community. And as a result, the Democratic Party. And so it's something they should fight back on. You know, we don't want a situation where we wake up and we find that our community's voting base and voting strength has been diluted to the point where we have absolutely no say-so. One particular section here had 2,500 voters in it. And within a year, because of them moving them from active to inactive, it went down, and this is an all-black section, went down from 2,500 voters to 406 voters.
Wow.
406. Over
2,000 people inactive.
And
well, let me say, I'm going to turn this over to Michonne after I ask you this question. Uh-huh. Should that be so much on the system or on the individual for not getting out to vote if you're able to get out and vote?
Well, they should, yes. But again, it is a right of theirs that they can choose to exercise or not.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You got the right.
You know, for whatever reason, they may choose, like, you've got a right to walk in the store and spend your money or not. You may choose to boycott and not spend your money at all. And so your right to vote, you can choose to use it or refrain from using it as a means of showing someone, for instance, that I'm not going to vote for you when I could have because you're not doing me right. So you can use that vote as power by using it or not using it, but it should be your choice, your choice. You know, when voting started here in America, the only people that could vote were white males who owned property and were at least 21 years old. Those who were black, Native American, white females, or even white males who did not own property could not vote. And so a precious thing that has been at the top echelons of our society from its beginning, we now have the opportunity and the right to vote. And we should exercise it. Too many of our African Americans are not using that powerful vote. We know we went through a phase where, you know, we get the term grandfathering because if your grandfather was a means of voter suppression and Jim Crow. If your grandfather voted, then you could vote. And if your grandfather voted, then he was at least 21 years old, owned property, and he was a white male. So it was a way of reducing it back to its original form of only a select few being able to vote. And so we have to encourage our people to get involved heavily, normally in runoffs, you have about a 35% decrease in voter participation. We need to, at all costs, get out
why
and educate
that?
Our
people. Why is that, Brother John, is that during the regular of voting, you know, there's more people. If they're a runoff, now people's going to come back to the poll. Why is that kind of psychology?
Well, many of them lose interest. Some of them don't know. So oftentimes, many of them, for instance, will not check the box that says if there is a runoff, then send me through mail a ballot so that I can vote in the runoff. There's a area of reasons why, but we should take our runoffs just as serious as we do our regular election.
Right. Go ahead, Miss Sean.
Serious because.
Hello. Okay, my question is this: with the voter suppression on the rise, who exactly is behind it? Is it white people in general? Or is it the Republicans, or are you having problems from both, the white Democrats and the white Republicans in South Carolina? So I'm just trying to find out what's going on.
Here in South Carolina, particularly in South Carolina, what we have is we have a trifecta. We have the governorship, the Senate, as well as the House of Representatives, all controlled by the Republican Party. So it's considered a trifecta. They own all three of the legs. We've got 46 counties. The Democrats are five short of being able to take that over. Out of the 124 in the House, Democrats only control 44 of the vote. And so they are not suppressing the votes as Democrats because they want a greater participation to be able to capture more of those seats, the majority of it coming from the Republican Party, because they are in full control, and if it stands as it is, they will remain in control. And so that is why we have to continually get out, educate, and push our people to vote. In North Charleston, where I reside, I ran in 2015, and at that time we had only 2,000 blacks voting. We've got 35,000 people registered to vote in North Charleston out of 120,000 residents. And so we educated and pushed people. We went from 2,000 to 4,000. And then the next time in 19 to over 6,000. So we went from, as blacks, 25% of the voting strength to now over 50%. So we outvote now all the other races combined. If you take whites, Hispanics, Asians, military, add them all up, Native Americans, the African American community now outvotes all of them. The issue we have now is unity, bringing those votes together so that we can determine the positions that we need that are controlling the resources, primarily the mayor of the city. You know, and that's why we have a lawsuit going on now, is because we feel in the last election, we won the election. We've got two certified results. We've got absentee ballots with no signatures. We've just got a host of irregularities that say that the incumbent did not win the race. It's got to play out in court. But it is only because we were able to push the voting participation from 25% to now over 50%. So we are not just the vote that will help by swinging the election. We are the lion's share. We are the determining vote. Now, an issue that we get into that no one really wants to address is the fact that we got some in our community who are just simply not acting in our best interest. They're selling us out. And we have, unfortunately, many of our leaders, those who are in positions of power or influence, and I hate to say it, but no, I don't hate to say it because it is what it is. Some of politicians, some of community leaders, such as our ministers, who are taking money under the table to continually split the black vote when we can have the whole pie.
Yeah, I've seen that before in the state of New Jersey. I've seen that. I've seen that. Yes. Yeah,
that happens
in a lot of in a lot of towns and cities. Yes.
Right. So that's
to get them to vote for you.
Pardon me?
What are you offering the voters? You saying the voters, like the preachers or the churches, however, splitting the vote and their sellouts. What are you offering people that they actually need or want to get their vote?
Well, we can't offer anything.
You know, people should get something for their
legally
vote.
You can't buy votes. But here's what we're offering.
I don't mean
we're
by
offering
legally.
A better quality of life. We offer them a better quality of life when it comes to housing, when it comes to less police brutality, when it comes to less killings. We're one of the highest in the nation in terms of homicides. We offer them the opportunity for no gentrification. We offer them the opportunity for better banking. We offer them the opportunity for better education. We offer them an opportunity to be an integral part of the financial resources of the city. We offer them in their own community infrastructure. You know, we offer them jobs. We offer them contracts. Out of the contracts for the city, we get less than 3% of the contract. If we, which I offer to do it based on parity, if we have 50% of the population, we will get 50% of
the contract,
which means that we will get $320 million a year put back into our community. We offer them, out of our 30-something positions, over $100,000 in this city. We have right now only three that are African-American that make over the $100,000. Under my administration, half of that, you're talking about 16 positions. That would be African-American because we will do it based on parity. But in terms of for their vote, outside of the better quality of life that we offer them, we cannot offer them anything directly for their vote. But dark money comes in the election, and the payoff, which is dark money, where they're using, unfortunately, city funds to convince these people to do that, then we have to fight against that.
Brother John, Brother John, I interview a lot of people from all over the country, from different communities, and 99.9% of my guests are black, for different type of communities from all over the country. And the list you name is consistent with everyone else. Housing, education, police brutality, gentrification. Like everybody is saying the same thing. Should that be a national black agenda for us? Let me put it this way. Let me ask a two-part question. Then I'm going to give it back to Rashawn. Should black folks have a black agenda? And if
Absolutely.
We do, should those issues be on our agenda? Because everybody's saying the same thing is affected. I don't care if they're black suburbs, black urban areas. Everybody is saying the same thing.
They're saying the same thing because if you do the research and you take a look, then, and we did a study in which we went out with a survey and we had the people to tell us what issues they were running into. And these are the things that came back that they were dealing with. And so we then started digging and looking even further into it to find that not only were these the major issues on the table, but these were issues that our public knew very little about. And if you don't know about it, then it's very difficult for you to then do something about it. Everything from, you know, for instance, many people never look at the spending transparency report to find out where the expenses for the city, you know, where they're going, who's getting paid. We found that we were having checks for $3 million at a time written to people, and the city was refusing to tell us what that money was for, who it went to. We found that when we looked at the balance sheet, that we had what was considered surplus. They call it the fund balance account, but the fund balance account is equivalent to a surplus. We've got $141 million in North Charleston that's just sitting there gaining interest, and then they take that money and divvy it up among friends for contracts every year. And so when we take a look at $141 million, and every time our community needs something, we are one of the communities that have a food desert. We haven't had a grocery store in that area in almost 20 years. And yet they tell us we don't have the money to build a grocery store. It's
you talk about
a
black grocery store?
Yeah, a black any kind of grocery store. There's not a major grocery store in that area, but it's because they want to gentrify that area. And if they gentrify the area, why would they put a grocery store? Even though we've had people to come in and submit a plan for a grocery store, they denied that. We've had people to submit plans for low-income housing. They have denied that. Why? Because they want to gentrify the area. We sit next to the city of Charleston, which is the most gentrified city in America. North Charleston has, in terms of eviction, the highest eviction rate in America. We also have the highest when it comes to homicide. And so we are, and we are the richest city in the state of South Carolina with the largest African-American community. So we are perishing in paradise only because we have allowed those who, in my opinion, sell us out to divide our community to the point where we do not harness that power and win the elections that we should that control resources. We have a strong mayor, weak council, which means that the power rests with the mayor. And he's paid to manage the budget after it's approved by the council versus a weak mayor, strong council where he has, in that situation, no power whatsoever over the resources. It's the city administration and the council. So we have here in North Charleston the ability to come forth and have everything in terms of resources we need to change our situation, and but for those who are willing, in my opinion, like a Judas Iscariot, to trade their community for 30 pieces of silver and to do it with a kiss, something as affectionate as a kiss, he sells Christ out. And it's the same. Our Judas Iscariot are selling us out for a few pennies. And so that's one, something that we have to address internally before we look at being able to capture, you know, the larger community and move forward. And it's not an anti-white thing. It is a pro-black thing. I would suggest to any race, white, black, green, it doesn't matter. If you put someone in office with your vote and they are not willing to get you everything that is fair to you, all of what in terms of resources, finances that should come to you, remove him from office.
Uh-huh.
That's got to do with economics. It's got nothing to do with color.
Go ahead, Michonne.
Do you have a plan to unite your community where you all can be on one accord? Because, you know, they say a house divided cannot stand. So what are you doing to try to get your community on one accord, to get them to see what you see, your vision for the community?
Well, we continually educate. We have a pamphlet that we put out that, based on the research that we did, we have compiled it, reduced it, and we've distributed probably 10,000, helping to educate people. And this is what has caused us to move from 2,000 to over 6,000 votes. So it's a long, tedious process because we're working against 400 years of not only slavery, but 400 years of people dealing with Jim Crow and dealing with voter suppression, old and new tactics that they're using that are basically the same. And so it's a long process, but we are moving in the right direction. We've more than tripled the number of voter participation, and right now it is scaring the mess out of the establishment. But we have to continually move forward, and it seems that every time we have a situation where we have voters to come to the polls, they either unfortunately use tactics where they cheat, or they dump more and more and more money into our community to sway those who are willing to accept it, to sell us out on the table. Because there's a lot at stake. There's a lot at stake when you're talking about controlling the largest, the richest city in the state with the would-be the largest population right now, with the second largest, between second and third, because there are over 8,000 people in our community that have not been annexed into the community, not that because they don't live in it, not because they're not taxed, but because if they did that, it would increase the black vote even more. And so what we have is, unfortunately, we have a situation where annexation is being used in order to dilute the black vote. And that's happening all across the country. There's annexation, there's municipal underbounding, which is a term that many people have not come across, but if they look it up, they'll see that it is lifelong taxation without representation. It is happening in America today. You know, we look at what's going on with the protests, and they say, well, you know, we're looting and tearing things up, and that's not good. Remember the protests from America, the first protest that they did was the Boston Tea Party. The Boston Tea Party started as a peaceful protest, throwing tea in the harbor. Had nothing to do with property tax, but a tea on, because they were tied up the economic exclusion. It turned ultimately into what we know as the American Revolution.
War. Yeah, war.
War. Outright war.
And that bitch about war.
Absolutely right. So don't say that it's an illogical thought process for there to be that kind of thing, because that's the example that has been set in terms of how America deals when they are economically excluded. So it's
right.
Logical.
And
do you promote
also
early voting?
Pardon me?
Do you promote early voting?
Absolutely. I promote early voting because for us in North Charleston, early voting, they will allow you to get the stats on the early voting the night before the election. So that tells you those who have committed that you know have voted, the ones you still have to go out and get, and it gives you a general idea of what the turnout could be, because it normally will be percentage-wise the same thing. Except when you go out and you promote it, it normally increases in the last couple of elections. Early voting has in our state increased dramatically because not just us, but many people have been promoting it because it tells you what the lay of the land is going to be. Now, I do not promote, and I know it can be controversial, but I do not promote pulling a straight lever. And the reason why is because within the Democratic Party, if we buy into the ideal that everybody is treated and treated fairly, and that was the actual case, I would say, yes, let's do it and put our people on the ballot as well. But when we have a situation like happens within our Democratic Party here, we've researched, for instance, and what we find is that when African-American candidates run and there's no white candidate in the race, the participation for whites drops from 12-13% down to 7%. They just simply don't get out and vote. And
wow.
In worst cases,
I didn't know that.
They would rather, oh, yeah. And blacks, we're voting at a rate of 19%. So pulling straight lever allows a person who is an undercover Republican, as I call it, to get on the ticket as a Democrat and win. Those who, in action, aren't doing anything for the Democratic Party or the African-American to get on the ticket and win. Many people in this state started Democrats only because they knew that if they started as a Democrat, they would get elected by the black community. Then they would transfer over to the Republican community, and blacks would continually vote for them. And that is exactly what has happened.
You know,
and so
this has been a question that came up a couple years ago. And not a question, but a thought that black folks should have their own party. That's one, similar to the Tea Party. Two, that we should not be loyal to any one party, you know, until they start addressing our issues as citizens of the United States, as voters of this country, you know, because our issues are different from others. And especially on the national scene, that politicians or candidates, I should say, candidates necessarily don't address our issues, but they use cold words, thinking that our issues going to be met, but it becomes the status quo. What's your sentiments about that thought process?
Well, what I think is that we vote in what is in the best interest of our community collectively. For instance, if we stay in the Democratic Party, in South Carolina, we're 60% of the vote. So we restructure it. We can literally control the Democratic Party and get what we're supposed to. So, for instance, if we have a block of voters and the Democratic Party continues to say, we are not going to support your candidates when they run, but we expect you to support ours, we're going to say absolutely no. We're not going to support you. We're not going to leave the party because this is the strength that we have. But what we will do is we'll go to the family member party or the Libertarian, and we'll sit and we'll talk with them. And if they are willing for us to support their candidate and put back into our community economically what we need, then we partner with them on that specific election. We need to be in the position that for the elections, individually, we know who is running, for what, how it's going to affect our community, and if, in fact, they are willing to economically be fair to us, then we put that candidate in. Now,
Let me ask That, and let me ask another question there. I'm going to turn it over to Bishan again. Suppose there was a Republican who happens to be, suppose there was a Republican who was running for office, happened to be African American, and is willing to address all the issues concerning the black community collectively.
Would I vote for?
Would you support that individual?
I would have to.
Here's the scenario. He's running against another candidate, okay? That's a Democrat, but that Democrat is not addressing the issue concerning the black community. Would you stay loyal to that party, or will you support that African-American man who's a Republican but is willing to address the issues of the black community in a collective manner, and that person has a plan?
I would support
him. And it's not just lip service.
I would support him. I would support him, and that's not lip service, because building my community, building my African-American community, is larger than the party. You understand? When we take a look at the history of whether it's the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, both of them have done us wrong. You know, Robert Smalls brought the Republican Party to South because the Democratic Party would not allow him to run on the ballot. And he's a black man. But as a general rule, I would not vote before I would vote for a Republican, because I am a part of the Democratic Party. But if we've got someone who is adverse to our black community, who is in fact a Democrat and not doing us right, I don't leave cancer in my body. I take it out. And if someone's offering a solution for that cancer, then you've got to consider that. We've got people within the Democratic Party that in action have done more damage than any Republican can do.
Yeah, you ain't lying about that.
So
go ahead, Michonne.
Okay, my question is this. I'm going to go back on what he said, like if there was a Republican that would address your issues and help the black community. Now, with saying that, anybody can get up there and give lip service and say, I'll do this for your vote and I'll do that. But when they get up there, they do what they want to, because usually they have their own agenda. Would you be willing to make them, the people who want your vote, would you be willing to say, here, we got a contract we want you to sign. If we help you get in this office, you have to sign on the dotted line before we go and vote for you. Make
that
it legal.
That would be the only way that I would, the only way I would end up voting for
that.
A Republican. Well, let me tell you why
I think they should do it to the Democrats too. I don't think that black people, I mean, because black people have been voting Democratic for a very long time, and they're still
since
in the
Kennedy.
Same position that they have been, and nothing
absolutely
has
right.
really changed.
Just recently,
so I don't think anybody, whether it's Republican or Democrat, I don't think we should give our vote away for free.
I agree with you 100%. 100%. And let me give you two examples. I just sat down with someone who is a Democrat running against a Republican, and I was involved with another race of a Democrat, and it happened to be an African-American. The other person is Caucasian. And I said, well, listen, I'm willing to support you, but here's what you must do. You must get out and support this black candidate who I know is running and will do good in our community, because he has been for 40 years. And they gave me lip service. They said, yes, and here are the things that I would do. We laid out specifically what they needed to do, and they did not do that. And so they will get absolutely no support whatsoever from me, because we're not giving our vote away unless it's reciprocal action. And that's to anybody, Republican or Democrat. There has to be some measurements that we take in up front to say, if these are fair things and you do not do them, then we are simply not going to support you. We, a few years ago, had a Democrat who was running for an office. Many of the white Democrats went to the other side and voted for the Republican candidate. They would rather see a white Republican in office than a black Democrat, because for them it was a racial issue. And so for me, it is my community first, and that is above party or anything else. And that doesn't mean that I'm running after the money, because I've been raised a Democrat and I've always voted a Democrat. But I need them to know that no longer are they going to take our vote for granted. And so as a community now, with the lion's share of the vote, if you do not push your white community to come out and vote at a higher rate when there's not a white candidate than when there is, then we're going to take our vote and hold it back from the Democratic Party, and we'll go to the Libertarian Party or someone else willing to be fair to the black community.
So, I have another question.
Sure.
Okay. When you say that if the other people wouldn't be fair to the black community, and you said the white people there, they vote based on race. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you say you vote, and you doing things as a community. Do you think it's something wrong with black people voting on race? Get a black
in America,
candidate
you got
on?
To. Go ahead. I want to hear the whole question.
Because if white people, even if they're Democrat, because there's a black person in it, they would jump over to the other side and vote for a Republican.
Uh-huh.
So why wouldn't your constituents vote based on race also? Because if there's a Democrat running, black people, the majority of them vote Democratic. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's somebody white running, why don't the black people do them like they do it? So if they go out and a white person wants their black vote, and they go out there just to get their vote, and then after they got their vote, they're done. They really don't need them again until the next time.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be willing to go tell your people to do the same thing? It's a white person, a white Democrat running, don't vote for them because of what they did before.
Oh, absolutely right. I would. You know, I don't think that the vote should be given away personally to anyone who does not live up to their word to the black community. Now, in America, you can vote for any reason you want. Skin color, hair color, the way they look, shoes they wear, that is your right. But when it comes to understanding the power of the vote, and if you want it to be able to improve your quality of life, now you have to, in groups, vote, and vote in such a manner that it will affect the final outcome. So I don't care whether they're white, black, Democrat, Republican. If, in fact, someone is not fulfilling their obligations to your community, don't vote for them. Don't vote for them, you know, because you're not voting for an ideal. That is not the end result of the vote. The vote is to improve your quality of life. And if they are not improving your quality of life, I don't care if they're black, white, Republican, Democrat, then don't vote for them. I'll be right in. Then don't vote for them.
That's not happened over the years.
No, I know it doesn't happen. And that's what we have to educate people. We have to educate people to be able to come to that level of understanding when it comes to voting. You know, so many of us go to the polls and we haven't no clue of who's even running. We pull the straight ticket and we go home. And that's it. And there are many people on the whole that may be good, on the whole. But your particular community, know your community. Try and understand who you're voting for, why you're voting for them, because if, in fact, you don't, what you leave yourself open to is to never improve your quality of life, to always be subject to gentrification, the lack of housing, police brutality, and those kinds of things. No infrastructure in your neighborhood. No loans when it comes to banking. No amenities in your community. And on and on and on. You subject yourself to always be in that position, because it is groups that help to win elections, not individual votes.
This might be the one last final question of tonight. We only got a few minutes left. What do you think of the national election this year? I mean, we really don't have a choice here. You know, what do you think of the elections, the national election this year? And how did you feel about John Bolton interview or assessment of our current president?
Well, he's close to knows him a lot better than I do. I don't agree with the sentiments that the president has at all, period. I think that the election this year, we have a choice. We can make a bad choice. In my opinion, the bad choice would be choosing him. And Biden, those are the two we're going to be voting for, that Biden is the better candidate for our black community. I was, you know, thrilled about the things that Bernie had on the table, and Biden has adopted quite a few of them. And so when we take a look at what the opportunity is there, then I think that Biden is going to be the better choice. But now that doesn't say that we should not fight for.
He might be the better choice, but he's not a good choice. He might be a better choice, but he's not a good choice. Over his record, he's not to be trusted. Look how he treated
people. You've got to take a look at the lesser of two evils.
Evil is still evil. So there's really no such thing as the lesser of two evils. They're both evil. Evil is evil.
Well, if one evil kills you and the other just cuts your foot off, would you rather live with one foot?
You assuming one will just cut your foot off. Joe Biden is for the LGBT community. He already said what he's going to do for illegal immigrants. First day in office, he didn't say about doing anything for anybody black up front when he get in there. So I think black people need to think about their vote. And I don't think that just because they vote for Biden, it's going to be a good thing for them, because they're going to be doing the same thing they have been, getting the same thing they have gotten. Just like they did with Obama. They didn't get anything.
But this is a hard choice. But we still
can't
sit on the fence.
Should we protest our vote? Because I haven't heard Joe say anything addressing our issues.
The other option is to vote for Trump, and we already know where he is. We already have seen, and
we know where Trump's at. You really don't know where Biden's at, but what he has mentioned, he didn't say doing anything for anybody black.
Well, we know that under the Obama administration, when he was the vice president, that collectively, together, they put more people on appellate court than we realize. And it's the appellate court that allows and where most blacks will get to get justice, not the Supreme Court, the appellate court. So in stacking the appellate court, for instance, in South Carolina, class action suit.
Overall, they're still not getting justice.
No.
I don't think
that
people
we are
should go out there and just
justice.
Vote for Biden because he's a Democrat.
Because it was black
people who put him back up there.
And South Carolina started that off. Okay, South Carolina started that off. But at the end of the day, you have to then decide.
Yeah, but
which,
he hasn't addressed.
Rules
he
do
have,
I go?
But Biden has addressed housing. He hasn't addressed police. He probably addressed police brutality because that's the trendy issue now. Everybody addresses police brutality.
But let me ask you, has Trump
education?
Has Trump addressed?
He hasn't addressed any of the issues that you cited
earlier
in the show.
He's not going to do anything for anybody black. He's going to others.
A very good friend of Biden happens to be here in South Carolina, black guy. He's been friends for a long time. Now, as I said earlier, my choice during the primary was Bernie. But that's not an option anymore. So when we take a look at ultimately, at the
Biden is an option for me, either or Trump.
Well,
and I have always voted. But I'm thinking about sitting this one out.
Well, you can. But that in itself
I know,
is a choice.
Because I'm not voting for lesser of two evils because I'm looking at it. They both evil. They can have at it.
I think here in America we are ever going to get to the point where it's a good evil that's clear cut. I don't think we're ever going to have that when in terms of a presidential election. So we're
evil
going to
evil.
Overall take a look. And that's why before the election, we've got to get involved in the political process, not wait until when it is time to vote for the president. Because, see, we can shape what those candidates are willing to put on the table long before the election.
We got to start at the local level, I believe.
Absolutely. We've got to start at the local level, like you said, and not wait until the election. In the meantime, we've got to make a decision, or the indecision still affects us. So while we look long-term to get an election, we've also got to make some unfortunate short-term decisions that
you know
are
what?
Going
nobody
to
nobody has
that.
To make an unfortunate short-term decision. That's a scapegoat. No, you don't. You don't have to take whatever's thrown out there and say pick one or the other one. You don't have to do that. You can say take that, SHIT. I don't want either one of them.
Well, that's the decision that you chose not to vote. You chose not to vote.
Right,
and
because I don't have to take anything. If you're not going to do anything to me, you can't have my vote. You got to get my vote. You got to give me something.
You have to make a decision. The decision you make may be not vote at all.
Okay, we have a minute left. Brother John, it's a pleasure. I thank you for coming on the show. And real quickly, are you running for mayor again in a couple of years?
Absolutely. I will run until I win.
Okay. All right. You have it there. I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in. This is Week Talk Productions. Presenting Black America. Thank Michonne for her questions and everything. And I want everybody to be safe out there. Remember, Black lives do matter. And you have the right to vote or not vote. As always, another week has surpassed. I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night.
Good night.
Hold it now.